Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and this is a real treat. We are here with the one and only Rita Moreno, who's coming for a special symposium at the Kennedy Center on Saturday. Miss Moreno, thank you so much. It's an honor.
I'm delighted. Thank you for that introduction.
Of course, you deserve it. Actually, the last time you were here was for the Kennedy Center Honors in 2015, and I talked to you on the red carpet and asked you if you had any advice for the Sharks and the Jets, and you gave us a great soundbite.
What did I say?
You said, oh, Anita would still say, get lost. You sounded still bitter over the whole thing. All these years later, would you have any words of peace between the Sharks and the Jets? What would Anita tell them all these years later?
Well, I think she'd tell the Jets to get lost, frankly. She'd say to the Jets, get lost, get out of here, get off my turf.
Well, that sounds like me.
Exactly. No, but you were great. But I guess before we dive into the symposium, just talk about how big of an honor that whole night was for the Kennedy Center Honors.
Oh, please. I don't even know when it happens to you if there are proper words for such an honor. It was a starlit night for me. It was just an extraordinary, extraordinary experience. So gorgeous. And you know, I'll bet you anything that a lot of people have forgotten that two people who were not quite as famous as they are now were honoring me on stage, and that's Lin-Manuel Miranda and Gina Rodriguez.
That's true, and they blew up with Hamilton and everything else right after that, so wow.
That's exactly, because Hamilton happened just literally, I don't know, a few months later. Something
right.
Like that.
So you were ahead of the curve.
Wow.
Oh, that's great. All right, well, let's go into what we can expect here from this symposium Saturday. Obviously, the chair of the Kennedy Center, David Rubenstein, is launching this new series of called Pro
You really need to ask David what he has in mind. I'm just a victim.
Well, just so our listeners know, it's called Profiles in Creativity. It sounds like he's going to sit down with, legend after legend, and he picked you as the first one.
I'm flattered to damn pieces. It's all of the previous honorees
right. Of
the Kennedy Center, and he had the idea, which I think is actually quite a marvelous one, because some astonishing people have been honored with this, to be redundant with this honor. And I imagine he's going to, it's archival purposes, so I imagine he's just going to ask the usual suspects the usual questions, but it's going to be on the record for a change. And I'm thrilled to be the first one. I can't believe he's doing this and that I'm it. So there will be an audience, and I spoke to my publicist and I said, well, what should I wear? Do you know what the setting is? And she said, yes, there will be black leather wing chairs. And I said, okay, that means I'm going to wear a lot of color.
It'll pop.
And I'm looking at the outfit right now because I'm in my giant closet, and I picked something that's really wonderful. It's going to stand out just in terms of the color combinations.
Can you give us a teaser, or is that a secret?
Well, it's it's a little jacket that's done in those permanent pleats, like the Issey Miyake pleats, and it's bright orange. And underneath, I'll be wearing a very bright electric blue and orange. Super on stage.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait. I'm sure we're going to go through all of your career.
That's what it's going to be. It's, tell us about yourself kind of afternoon.
Awesome.
And I'm thrilled that he wants to know. And I am thrilled that he chose me. And I'm also delighted that I will be in the archives. Wow. I mean, for a little Puerto Rican girl, my dear.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that a little bit. You mentioned for a little Puerto Rican girl, that's your home country, and you moved to the island of Manhattan later, obviously, as you made it famous in the song.
That's right. My mom brought me to another island, which was, we're going to another country, and it's called New York City.
What was that transition like when you first landed? And
it
then,
it was terribly difficult. It was painful. It was sad. It was bewildering. I was 5 years old, and I could not understand why my mommy, we want to move from this beautiful paradise in which we lived to this place that was freezing cold where the trees had no leaves, which was no end of wonder to me. I kept saying, what's wrong with the trees? And she said, it's a thing called winter.
Oh, that's great. I love how you can still do your mom's accent. That's perfect.
Oh, you're kidding. That's what I'm using in my series right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. Like you say, in America, did you find that it was true? Like, you know, life is all right in America if you're all white in America at the time?
Oh, for sure. And listen, not just at the time. I mean, come on. Let's be realistic. It's not great now, but it was really bad then. It's gotten better. The door is certainly more than ajar than it used to be. There have certainly been, you know, wonderful improvements, but we still have a long way to go. I mean, you see that, you're reminded of that just about every day. All you have to do is open up the newspapers.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to say that everything is fine is utopian, but that's not how it is.
Long, long way to go, for
but
sure.
But still, you know, still and all, and I want to go on record, this is still one of the greatest countries ever.
Absolutely.
Just a wonderful country. I mean, look at the little Puerto Rican girl. How astonishing this is. Amazing.
Absolutely. All right, so you work your way up. You're in New York. You get into acting. Take me into one of your earliest roles, masterpiece, Singing in the Rain. You know, we just lost Debbie Reynolds.
You know, she and I were both youngsters under contract to MGM, and she got the break. And we became friends, and she was quite hilarious, and she was very cute also and funny. And I'll tell you one little anecdote because I just love this. We used to go to movies and, you know, do little things together now and then. I can't say that we have had an extremely close friendship, but we had a friendship. And, well, because we were, you know, two of the younger ones at the studio. So we gravitated toward each other for, if nothing else, for that reason. And one time she asked me to keep her company because she was going to go to perform at a high school show, which I thought was really generous of her. Mm-hmm. And I went to her house and I sat in her bedroom while she was changing and all that kind of stuff. And finally she said, okay, I'm ready. And we went to the door of the bedroom. She said, oh, wait a minute. I almost forgot. She went to her dresser, pulled open a drawer, took out two giant powder puffs and stuck them in her bra. But not so much as a how do you fairly well.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, that's a great little anecdote.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to miss Debbie Reynolds. But in terms of the creators and, you know, Stanley Donen and Gene Kelly, just talk about sort of their genius and you know, what you sort of gathered.
Well, Gene Kelly, yeah, that was my dream, for heaven's sake. I had a 7-year contract with MGM Studios. You know, the 7-year doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot, really. They'll pick up your option or they won't, and after 3 years, they drop mine. But that was the studio of my dreams. It was the studio that made all of the great, great musicals.
Yeah.
I know that other studios made musicals too, but nothing compared to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
The Arthur Freed era, man.
Oh, man. Yeah, they had all these great, huge stars there. They had Judy Garland there. They had Astaire was there. They had, who am I thinking of? Ann Miller. Yeah. I mean, it was just unbelievable. To be a part of Singing in the Rain was just staggering to me. It was a little part, but so proud to have been a part of that.
Absolutely. And a couple years later, speaking of legendary musicals, you're in The King and I, 1956.
That was Fox, yes.
Yeah, you changed studios, but another legendary musical. You're Tuptim, which is a heartbreaking character. You know, you're running, want to run away with the hubby, and you can't do it. He's killed, and oh, man, it's powerful, especially during the end when they do the, you know, when they're putting on the performance and you kind of stand up for yourself. But memories of that with Yul Brynner and Deborah Carr, man.
It's extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. And first of two movies that I made with Jerome Robbins. He only made two, and I was in both of them. I was in West Side Story because of him. because we'd already done King and I, and he felt that I would be a good Anita in it. So that was what an extraordinary experience. Ewell was hilarious. He had the potty mouth of all time.
Really?
Of course, nowadays, you know, the question should follow, well, how potty mouth? Because everybody's potty mouth nowadays.
Right, et cetera, et cetera.
You know? I mean, that's nothing. But it's pretty shocking but what I loved was Deborah befriended me because I was the only other leading person in the movie, the female. And she loved panties with naughty sayings.
Really?
Listen, English women are really very ribald. I mean, you should know that by now. Julie Andrews is a very mischievous woman. They're all absolutely roguish. And now and then she would call me to her dressing room. She'd poke her head out of the dressing room door and she'd say, Rita, come here. And then she would lift up those voluminous skirts that she wore in the movie and she'd say, what do you think of this?
Man, all right. Well, we did see Black Narcissist, so I could see it. I could see that.
Isn't that delicious?
That's such a great story. Man, you're giving me gold. All right, well, we got to go in. You mentioned Drone Robbins. We got to talk about West Side Story. Did you, I know it made its pre-Broadway debut down here in D.C. at the National Theater, and then, of course, came to Broadway. Did you see Cheetah Rivera on Broadway before before the movie?
I saw it, but I saw it after it opened in New York.
Gotcha.
And Jerome had asked me to come audition for the play, for the musical.
Oh.
And I, when the time came, I didn't have the guts. I was too, I'd done too many movies where you can always do it again.
Yeah.
If it doesn't go right. And I was just too scared to do it. So, unhappily, I didn't get to do the play. But, you know, happily for the audience, Cheetah Rivera was pretty fabulous playing Anita. And I did go to see the play after it opened, something like 6 months, a year later. And I remember thinking, I think this was a mistake. But it wasn't, at the time I looked like a Maria. I wasn't going to audition for Anita. I was going to audition for Maria.
Right.
Because that's what I looked like then when he knew me in The King and I.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
Anita happened when the movie came along, but originally I was supposed to audition for Maria.
Isn't that funny how it works out? But so instead,
boy.
Instead you go, I think it worked out in your favor. So talk about, once you're in the movie.
Well, I had to audition just like everybody else. I had to audition for the singing, for the dancing, and for the acting. I did an acting audition for Jerry and Robert Wise, who co-directed. And I did a singing audition, and then I did a dancing audition. And it was absolutely, I was wrecked because I really, really wanted that part so badly.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't danced for a very long time at that point. So I was really, really nervous, but it worked out.
Yeah, I'd say. What made the Bernard, though, to your Anita, what made George Chakiris so special?
Oh, just about everything. First of all, aside from his gorgeous, gorgeous looks, by the way, we are still friends. We are very, very close.
Oh, that's great.
We were always close. We were each other's dates for the Oscars. He had a quality that you rarely, rarely see in male dancers. Robert Fairchild of Broadway has that. He had elegance. But George had an elegant style that was just unbeatable. Nobody else. You look at those old movies, nobody moved the way he did. I mean, he's just a joy to look at. Whenever I see the movie, which is surprisingly, at least once a year, I look at him. And I don't look at anyone else, even in America. I don't look at me, I look at him. He is just such a beautiful dancer, my God. And he has a natural elegance. It's not something you can put on.
Right.
That's the way he dances. And, you know, other than a stare, I can't remember anybody who had that particular quality. He gave Bernardo that which is something that you don't expect when you're playing a gang member.
Oh, absolutely.
He brought such class to that part. And he still is that way. He's still skinny as a rail. And as far as I know, he's still taking ballet class during the week. Mm-hmm. And which is, just unusual. He likes dance. Mm-hmm. So it was just an absolute joy.
What was Robert Wise's style as a director compared to, let's say, Stanley Donen and Gene Kelly earlier? Well,
let's compare it to Jerome Robbins, because they were co-directing. Jerry was all for making us crazy and insecure and tearful. He was a very, very tough man. He was also kind of sadistic. He was very, very, very tough. So they were a huge contrast together. And Bob Weiss was very calm, very sweet, very thoughtful. But interestingly enough, he was not the director Jerome Robbins was. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, totally.
Jerry was, very dynamic and sharp and edgy, all kinds of things like that. And Bob was exactly the opposite. But as afraid of Jerry Robbins as all of us were, to this day, if he were alive and he called me and said, Rita, I want you to do a play with me or a film with me, I would drop everything, because he was a genius.
Of course. And maybe those conflicting
styles.
I think
what we have to remember about Robert Wise, to give him his due, is that he was a great, absolutely great editor.
He started on Citizen Kane, I think.
As an editor.
Yep.
So some of those glorious cut twos in West Side Story, and also in Sound of Music, were his.
Yeah, that's very
true. I mean, Jerome Robbins was not, I don't think that Jerry contributed that much to the, how can I say? I don't really know.
Right.
But experience tells me that Bob Weiss did, there was some crazy, wonderful cuts in that movie. And I would say it was Bob.
Absolutely. No, I'm glad that you brought that up to our listeners, because they might not remember that or realize that he was the editor on Citizen Kane, and he bumped up to director, I think, when they kicked Orson Welles off of Magnificent Ambersons. That's when he got his bump up to director.
Did he direct? He edited Ambersons, didn't he?
Yeah, so he edited Citizen Kane for Welles, and then he was editing Ambersons for Welles as well, but by the end of the project, Welles got kicked off, and they promoted Robert Wise to, finish directing the movie, and I think that's how he got started directing.
Oh, gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then, so we might not have West Side Story,
But what's interesting, too, is that a great editor is not necessarily a great director.
Yeah, sure.
There are worlds of difference. Editing is something entirely different than directing. And I think Robert Wise was not a great director. He was a good director. But Jerry Robbins was instinctively a good director, despite all of his emotional problems. There was, as far as I'm concerned, no comparison, really.
Interesting. Well, you mentioned, let's go to Oscar night. You mentioned that you were Shakira's date, and you both wound up winning. Memories of that real quick.
We were very busy making up sour grape speeches, because we were so sure we were going to lose. And they were funny speeches, too.
Right.
George and I have always laughed a lot together. He's hilarious, I'm hilarious, and we just have this gorgeous synergy. It was the apex of my life at that time, and George as well. I mean, the movie just swept the awards, which was thrilling beyond belief.
Absolutely. And you're one of the rare EGOTs, which I'm sure they'll talk about on Saturday. Talk about sort of how you, after all of this success, on the big screen, how you really found a home in TV, Electric Company, 9 to 5, and Oz,
yes,
of course.
Why did you
find such a home in TV, you think?
Well, what a question. You know what it's called? You're not being offered anything else in movies. Did that never occur to you?
Way to be honest.
But a lot of actors went to TV when they couldn't get film jobs.
There you
Think
go.
About it. Think about all of the actors who were in movies and then somehow went to television at a time, by the way, when television was not the most respected thing in the world.
Right. Yeah. Well, it brings us sort of back to Singing in the Rain or even like a Sunset Boulevard. If some of those people had the outlet to go to TV, maybe they could have. Maybe
exactly. Well, they would have if they had had that opportunity. But so TV started to take the dregs, as it were, of the people from film who were not doing film. And not because they didn't deserve to be offered those parts in films, but because they weren't. It sometimes had something to do with ageism, and other times with typecasting. All kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
You have to keep in mind the times, you know, when what was happening when.
Absolutely. And one day.
But you're a youngster.
yeah, for sure. But I love all of your work. Are you kidding me?
Are you going to come to the interview?
Yeah, I got to be there, right? It's going to be great.
Well, I hope so. But if you do, please come backstage and we'll take a photo together.
I love that idea. That would be fantastic.
I would like that, too.
That's so great. Well, you've been more than generous with your time. There's so much more we could talk about. I know One Day at a Time got re-picked up. You just got picked as one of People Magazine's Most Beautiful People again. And man,
can you believe that? I wish my husband and my mom were around. They would just pee in their pants.
Oh, that's so great. But, I mean, the accolades go on and on. George Bush gave you a Medal of Freedom. Barack Obama gave you a Medal of Arts. And then, of course, the Kennedy Center Honors. Like, you are the cream of the crop, Rita Moreno. So we really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, yes, that's very sweet. Thank you. And I look forward to meeting you.
Yeah, we'll see you out there on Saturday. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.